Welcome to Authors on Tour Live, a weekly podcast for people who love to hear about books from the authors themselves. My name is Darren Fote, and today we are podcasting live from the Tattered Cover Bookstore, one of the premier independent bookstores in the nation, with three locations in the Metro Denver area. You can visit www.authorsontourlive.com for a complete list of upcoming podcasts. Wait a minute, it's time to begin.
Well, good evening. Welcome to the Tattered Cover out here in Highlands Ranch. My name is Lisa. I'm so glad you guys came out tonight, and thank you so much for supporting our bookstore and for supporting our author events. We really appreciate it. Again, it's my pleasure to introduce C.J. Box, who's a New York Times bestselling author and an award-winning author and my friend, because I think I've introduced all his books at the Tattered Cover, and I would not have it any other way. If for some reason I ever left the store, I'd make him take me back for the signings or something. But anyway.
I wouldn't do that.
I know. Anyway, he's going to talk about his wonderful new short story collection, which just hit the shelves yesterday, so this is hot off the press, and it's called Shots Fired. Kirkus Review came out, and basically, if you're looking for rising tension played out against spectacular natural scenery, nobody does it better than C.J. Box. So please welcome C.J. Box.
Thank you. Thank you
very much, and thank you for coming. I'm thrilled. You know, I mean, short stories are a different ballgame than full-length novels, so I didn't know if people would be that interested. So thank you very much for coming. What I'd like to do is read a little bit and then open it up for questions or comments or anything. Has anybody actually read this yet? Lisa? Okay. Well, that's good. That's great. Well, Grandma has. Have you actually read it? Oh, well, good. Well, what I'd like to do, there's one story in particular, it's one of my favorites in the book, and it's only like 1,000 words long, which is very challenging, but the Daily Telegraph in the UK had a series that they were doing a few years ago where they asked authors to contribute very short stories, and I worked on this one that I'll read to you that, like I said, is one of my favorites. It's very difficult to create an entire world in 1,000 words. That's about 4 pages, especially this one that's kind of a multi-generational story. And they accepted it. I was excited about it. Then they discontinued the feature and never ran it, nor anybody else's. So here it is for the first time. It's called Blood Knot. 14-year-old Hattie Sykes was awake when her grandfather cracked the bedroom door and said, "Ready to hit the river?" Because he was deaf, he spoke loudly, assuming everyone else was deaf as well. She could see he was wearing his fly fishing clothes, old chest waders held up by suspenders, a thick red shirt, a fishing vest, a short-brimmed Stetson. She said, "It's not even light out yet. Hell, I gave you an extra 30 minutes. What time is it?" 5:45, damned late. Hattie moaned. The room smelled of her brother Jake in the next bed. Nothing smelled as awful as a 16-year-old boy in a closed room. "Anyone else coming?" he asked. "No, they said they'd rather sleep in." "I'm not surprised," he boomed. She watched as he missed with the egg. Instead of cracking it into the pan, the runny yolk and white slithered onto the burner. He cursed, caught himself, and said, "Sorry." "Let me do it," she said, getting up from the table. "My eyes don't work until they're warmed up," he said, stepping aside. While she scrambled eggs and cleaned up the mess, he shuffled around the kitchen with a cup of coffee. She didn't like coffee, but she liked the smell of it in the morning, especially in her grandfather's lodge, especially before they went fishing. Her two older brothers, Jake and Justin, were still sleeping downstairs. Justin was the oldest and had landed the spare bedroom to himself. Her parents were in the master bedroom on the top floor. Her grandfather had given them that room because he no longer liked climbing the stairs. Plus, they liked to sleep late after a night spent emptying the liquor cabinet. The sun broke over the mountains and lit up the dew on the grass like sequins. Her grandfather walked haltingly toward the river with his fly rod, and she followed. He was a tall man with wide shoulders, but from the back, he seemed to be caving in on himself. She'd seen photos of him when he was young, before he started his company, married her grandmother, raised her mother, and got rich. He was brash and dashing in the photos, with jet black hair and high, almost Indian cheekbones. Those high cheekbones now made his face look skeletal, and his once sharp eyes were filmy. A fleshy dewlap under his jaw swayed as he walked. Since her grandmother died the year before, he'd turned into an old man. He preferred to live at his lodge on the river rather than at his big house in town. "I wrote a story at school," Hattie said. "I called it Fishing with My Grandpa." "Did I catch a lot of big fish in it?" he asked. "Well, one. I hope you got an A." "I did." In the car on the way to the lodge, her parents had talked softly, assuming all three children were sleeping. Hattie was faking it and listened. "I won't miss this annual pilgrimage to visit the old coot," her father said. "I know," her mother agreed. "This is probably the last year we can make the boys come," he said. "With no Wi-Fi or video games, what are they supposed to do? It's ridiculous." "Jay, every year we pay homage," her dad said. "I hope to hell it's worth it for us in the end. Just another year or two, I think." "It means a lot to him," her mother said. "It better mean a lot to us. Hattie still likes it. She's going to grow up, too. And then what?" She watched as her grandfather struggled to tie the tippet to the leader of his line. His fingers were long and bony, the backs of his hands mottled with spots. He couldn't see well enough to make a knot. "Can I help? Do you know how to tie a blood knot?" "Yuck," she said, taking the two strands. He laughed. "There's no blood involved." He told her how to cross the lines over each other, twist the ends around the opposite length, and pull the tips through the loop to secure it. She was surprised at how well the knot turned out. "It's not about blood," he said, thanking her. "It's about the knot." He cast gracefully. He told her fly fishing was an elegant sport, and she agreed. There was a V-shaped braided current in the river created by a rock. There was usually a fish there, but he wasn't presenting the fly far enough upstream. She said, "More to your right." He shifted his feet and squared his shoulders, cast again, and the fly drifted through the braid. She saw the trout come up out of the depths and take it. "Fish on," he said, raising the tip of his rod to set the hook. She clapped her hands and was surprised when he handed the rod to her. "Bring it in, Hattie," he said. "You can do it." After landing the rainbow trout, it looked metallic and beautiful in the morning sun, she released it back into the water. She was thrilled, and when she stood up, he slipped his fishing vest over her narrow shoulders. "It's yours," he said. "The rod, too. Now catch another one." As they walked back to the lodge at mid-morning, her parents were out on the deck drinking coffee in their robes. They looked disheveled. Her brothers weren't to be seen. Her grandfather said, "The lodge needs to be stained every 5 years. The decks need to be painted every 3. All the paperwork is in my desk." She stopped and squinted at him. "The keys are in the pocket of the vest," he said. "Maybe your mom and dad will come visit you once a year." Hattie realized what was happening, but she couldn't speak. Her eyes stung with tears. "It's not about the blood," he said, brushing her cheek with the back of his hand. "It's about the knot." So that's the shortest one in the book. Thanks. Don't worry, there's 9 other stories, and the body count gets quite high in the others. The anthology exists because over the years, since I've started, I've been asked from time to time to contribute short stories to other anthologies and to magazines and to newspapers. And there was a very, very small press in Southern California that does limited edition short stories that are bound and illustrated. And 3 of the stories that are in this had been previously published in a limited edition. And when I say limited, I mean only 250 copies. And a lot of readers over the years have found out about those stories and asked where they could get them. And because of the nature of book collectors, the only way you can get them is if somebody's selling them for a lot of money. So once the rights reverted back and I was able to gather them all back up into one place, I wrote a couple of three new stories. The first one called One Car Bridge, which is a Joe Pickett story. The last one in the book called Shots Fired, and then Blood Knot, all so that they're new in this book. And so every short story I've written over the years has all been collected into one place. I like short stories. I love reading them. I've been reading Flannery O'Connor all summer long, all those story after story. And when they're done well, I think they're a specific kind of art form. They're harder to write than a novel, because you've got to create an entire world and cast of characters and sense of place all within just a few words, and then hopefully bring it home, and then hopefully bring it home with a twist. So there's a lot of twists and tales and some very dark stories in here, and they run the range from 1835 Wyoming, two mountain men snowbound in a cabin for an entire winter, and what happens, to modern day Paris, where a couple of modern day Sioux Indians go over there because they find out, which is true, that elegant French women love to go to bed with American Indian men. So they make themselves available, but that one takes a very nasty turn as well. So you can read the books, read the stories however you like, of course, but what I'd suggest, what works best, is if you maybe read one a day and then set the book aside. It's only been out 2 days, but I met somebody in Arizona last night that said they got an early copy of it, and they read the entire thing in 6 hours. It was great. And I thought, oh, you know, each one is different. The one is, you know, inevitably going to run into the next if you read them all like that. But I hope you enjoy them. There probably won't be another short story collection for quite a long time. So if you enjoy these, That'll be it. You'll be stuck with novels from now on. So, does anyone have any questions about the stories, the Joe Pickett series, the standalones, anything? Me, I'd be happy to answer them. Yes. How do I keep track of the characters from book to book? Well, sometimes I screw up. I know I do that. But what I try to do with every book, I'm an outliner. And with every book, I create kind of the cast of reoccurring characters and then another list of new characters being introduced. So when I go on to the next book, I can check back and see exactly what you're asking. Where was everybody at the end of the last book, and will they continue in this new one in a logical way? So, you know, with the series, with 14 books down now, you know, now I actually think one or two books ahead with each one and introduce things that will later be developed. I didn't do that at first because I never knew. I always thought it would be my last book. But I think, you know, there are a couple of open threads at the end of each book now that will be, you know, I'll resume with the following ones, but the major plot elements are always resolved. So that's the idea anyway. Yes. Do I actually know somebody like Joe Pickett's mother-in-law? Well, have you met my mother-in-law? No, she's not like that at all. I just like to say that, so thank you for asking. No, the answer is no. You know, sometimes characters, you know, when I was talking about, you know, it was the third book, Winter Kill, where both Nate Romanowski and Missy were introduced. I didn't have any ideas about carrying either of them through that one book, but they were such interesting characters, they kept going. And no, I've never met anybody like that. Occasionally I get a little spooked when I meet somebody who comes up and says, Missy is my favorite character in the book. And I say, you're kidding me, right? You know, but no, she's made up. Most of the characters are. The only one, at least in the Joe Pickett series, that's based on a real person is Nate Romanowski, who's based on a friend of mine that I grew up with in high school, who's still around, a Falconer, middle linebacker for the football team, went into the Air Force Academy, Special Forces, and with kind of his own. I used to go falconry hunting with him. But the rest are all made up. Yes, sir. Charles James. CJ stands for Charles James. Yeah. When I was, before I started writing, I worked for a newspaper in Saratoga, Wyoming, and I wrote as Chuck Box, wrote some columns. And one night I went to a ranch party outside of town, and a couple of ranchers were standing around, and they came up and they said, "Hey, we really like your stuff, and we love that Western pseudonym." You know, because a chuck box is on the back of a chuck wagon. And I think I was 24, and I was really offended. So the next day I started writing as CJ Box. Which is good when I have to sign a lot of books. Yes?
Where did the name Nate Romanowski come from?
Well, at the time I created Nate Romanowski, Bill Romanowski was a good guy on our side and hadn't committed many crimes yet. That's one I wish I could take back and rename. But once you name him, that's it. Yes. Yes. Yes, he is. Rob Whipple is the name. I you know him?
Yeah.
I donate your name in a book to a lot of fundraisers, most of them local fundraisers in Wyoming, around Cheyenne, Frontier Days, animal shelter kind of thing, where people can, as long as they sign a paper that says they don't have any editorial control and that they know that their character may be killed or may be the bad guy or may be the serial murderer, as long as they're okay with that, then I'll put their name in a book. I think he did. I think he bought a whole bunch of copies of that book. Yes.
So what does Lori call you?
Lori, my wife? She calls me Hunk of Burning Love. I wouldn't say that if she was here. She's involved in Cheyenne Frontier Days, and they started an event tonight, so she couldn't come. Yes?
Have you found a place for Joe Pickett's dad's ashes?
Not yet. There, I think there's a reference in the last book where Joe did retrieve them from the truck that they were buried in, and they're in the work. Yeah, they're on the workbench. Yes? Do I hunt? Yeah, yes, I do. I don't hunt as much as I used to. I have gotten an elk the last 2 years, which is a rarity for me. But mainly I hunt birds and fish a lot. I'm a fly fisherman. And I just think, you know, we live outside of town, outside of Cheyenne. You know, we're just always watching the weather. It affects everything we do all day long. So I think I just, you know, the environment and the weather are an important character in every book. And I think if my goal is always to put the reader there, whether it's the smell of the forest or the light or whatever, and I think that enhances the book if the reader really feels like you are there. And so thank you. Yes. Saddle String is not, it's kind of based on three places. It's Sheridan, Wyoming, Buffalo, Wyoming, and Saratoga, Wyoming. And it's located, in my mind, about where Story, Wyoming is. I'm glad it's a fictional town. Yeah, I'm glad with the first book I didn't say it was Sheridan, for example, because that would really limit what I can do with the books. You know, where in my world, it's right next to the reservation, which it isn't, you know, so that I have different blocks of those, each of those towns in mind when I describe Saddle String and then the river that goes through the middle of town, like Saratoga. Yes?
Isn't there a Saddle String Wyoming post office?
There is. It's on the HF Bar Guest Ranch. And I've got a picture of myself before I ever had a book published when I was up there standing on the little porch where it says Saddle String, Wyoming. So I absconded with the name. Yes?
You were mentioning that you use real people's names in your book.
Mm-hmm.
I had an odd thing happen to me last week. I was visiting my sister-in-law in a rehab center, physical. And this young lady, we were talking about your books. A young lady came in and said, "You read a lot of books?" And we both said, "Yes." And she said, "I'm a bridesmaid in his youngest daughter's wedding."
Oh, really?
And then she said, "And he used my name in the highway."
Oh, that's right. So this was Aaron.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
She said, we said, "Did you die?" And she said, "Yeah."
Mm-hmm. Yes, I used three of my daughter's friends as truck stop prostitute victims. But I did ask them all ahead of time if that was okay.
Yeah.
I think they got a kick out of it. One of the parents wasn't too pleased. But... Yes.
Oh,
sure, your name.
Speaking of truck stops, I'll never be able to trust a truck stop back here.
You know, I think that there's things in that book I think that resonate well beyond just that book. I've noticed that just as this tour started, there's always questions and about the highway, and people say, you know, they can't get that one out of their mind. It's a very dark, scary book, and not for everybody, and certainly not for people who are expecting kind of a, you know, a Joe Pickett adventure. It's very dark, and it's probably about as dark as I'm ever going to get, because that book scared me too. There is a sequel, however. It's going to be out next year. It's called Badlands, and in it, Cassie Duell takes a job with the Williston, North Dakota Sheriff's Department in the middle of the Bakken oil boom, where men outnumber women 30-1, and so it's a great location. It's going to be a good book, I think. So watch for that one. Yes. How did I come up with the idea for the Game Warden? Well, a couple of things. One, I never set out to write a series. I never thought, you know, the world is just waiting for a Game Warden series, and I'm the guy to do it. The first book, Open Season, in my mind, was about Endangered Species Act and the things that happen on the ground with well-intentioned legislation, and I needed a protagonist to drive that story, and originally it was going to be a sheriff, and then it was going to be a journalist, which is what I was, but then in real life, I was doing ride-alongs with the local game warden, and I realized this would be the guy who would actually be in the middle of this controversy. Because he's out in the field, he'd be consulted. He could drive. He's the driver of the story. So that's when the Game Warden came about. And then when it finally Penguin Putnam decided to publish it, they offered a contract for that and two other books with Joe Pickett as the protagonist. So that's how the series got started. And I'm glad. I'm never regretted that one bit, because I like to write about, obviously, outdoor issues and controversies. And a game warden, like, you know, either Wyoming, Colorado, are the guys in the middle of most of those things. And they're heavily armed, and they work alone, and it works, I think. Yes. Who do I like to read? I read very widely. Kind of fiction, nonfiction is my list. In this genre, you mean, primarily? I'm a fan of like John Sanford, Denise Mina, Michael Connelly. Read all of their stuff. Cormac McCarthy. I'm reading all the Flannery O'Connor short stories right now. So... Yes.
In your book, Stone Cold, as far as your outline and tying everything together to really get it going, I found it to be one of the most complicated books.
Really?
From you, as far as trying to keep things separate but together.
Well, thanks.
Very intense, too, so the
couldn't put it down.
Good. Good. Thanks.
Is that on purpose?
Well, it is. Yeah. You know, I never try to dumb down a book. I think, you know, I think readers can handle a lot of stuff because they're smart. You know, at once, and I think that that heightens the tension and suspense too when there's several things going at once and never in predictable ways. So, thank you. Yes. Are there any counties in Wyoming that I compare the one to Stone Cold? No. Yes. Blue Heaven, it's still under option. They reoptioned it once again. I tell you the same story every year. So this is the fifth time it's been reoptioned. They have yet to start filming it, but they keep sending me another check every time, which is good. There is some news on that front. I mentioned on Hugh Hewitt's show that we're negotiating right now offers being made to create a Joe Pickett TV series for... It's CMT, the Country Music Channel, wants to do a scripted drama, and Robert Redford is executive producer on it. So, I mean, we're negotiating right now. So, I couldn't tell you anything about actors or when it might air or if it will air. You know, if it'll even go beyond a pilot, I don't know. But it's finally that's happening. And then there's and just as of yesterday. A big-time Hollywood TV producer and director and writer, who even I knew his name, wants to develop a series with the characters from The Highway and the Cassie Duell character. So it's kind of, if after 14 years, all of a sudden it's happening in like a month. So, yes. Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. And, you know, several things like Fargo. Is that a trend that's going to keep escalating more and more and more and more? I don't know if it's going to stop.
So, yeah, the question is, do I think on the cable channels, if they're going to continue to escalate and raise you know, the level of violence and gore and so on? I think probably yes. You know, and I think that, you know, but I think like everything, that'll hit a point where it turns people off, where it's just done for shock value. And if it's just done for shock value, it doesn't work. What's exciting, though, is kind of the same kind of line, is that because there's so many networks and so many channels and they all want their own stuff, they're looking at novels and novelists now to do long form series, like they are talking about with the Joe Pickett thing, where it's not a show that ties up at the end of an hour. They just, you know, I think the dream for every novelist would be to have a show that went slowly through each book in turn, and kept close to the source material. And that's what that's a new trend, which I think is a exciting trend. I love to watch that kind of stuff. Justified. I don't know if anybody is fans of that. I love that show. The Americans, those kind of things. That's good stuff. So I hope they do that, but there's no guarantees that it'll be any good. Yes, sir. For the second book, did I feel a lot of pressure? No, what I felt was like released. You know, it didn't come that early in life. I'd been working on manuscripts for off and on for 20 years. And to actually have a publisher say, we want to publish your second book, didn't seem like pressure to me. It seemed like, you know, a party. I could actually finally do that. I could actually write not on spec. So I've never felt any pressure like that. It's the best job in the world, in my opinion. I get to do some really cool things now, and I get to fish just about everywhere, because usually the landowner has read the books. And I actually got a thank you note the other day from a landowner on the North Platte River. Nobody gets to fish this certain stretch. He wrote me a thank you note for fishing on his land. Yeah, 10 years ago, it never would have happened.
Oh, yeah. Yes. How long did I want? Although my first direction was more journalism. But I remember even as a really little kid going to the Casper, Wyoming library and going into the stacks and the bees to see where my book would be someday. But I didn't know what it would, I didn't know what it would be about. It would just be a book. So I think I've heard it and read it. I mean, writers write. If that's that passion that you have, you cannot not write, published or not.
So have you been writing then for?
Oh sure, yeah. Not fiction necessarily, but journalism. I was a reporter and wrote feature articles and a columnist, that kind of thing. But I don't, you know, my mom says she remembers me writing lots of stories, but I don't, not that much. Yes?
What I'm curious about, the lady asked you about the reading list. I am impressed with your balance of environmental issues.
Oh, thank you.
Being kind of right in the middle and seeing the dangers on both sides. And I'm curious, what are some of the articles or books that you would recommend in that area?
Oh, I do read a lot of environmental stuff on both sides. Writers like Barry Lopez. This always happens when I start forgetting names. But I read on both sides of issues, especially when I'm researching for a book. And I also always, like, for example, early book called Trophy Hunt was about coal bed methane production and, you know, land rights and mineral rights. And I didn't know about anything about any of those subjects other than that was a big deal at the time. So what I did was, what I've done several times is I find experts on both sides of the political aisle of that issue and ask them to review certain passages of the book to make sure that their point of view is portrayed accurately. And it's usually by another character. And no one has ever refused. And I've gotten a lot of good information from people on both sides by asking them to make sure that that's accurate.
And what is the real-life event based off of Breaking Point, one of my favorite novels?
Now, that was one that's not very balanced because the EPA wouldn't talk to me. I only had one side of the story, and they lost. You know, but that's based on a real Supreme Court decision that it's in the back of the book that cites it. And there's a website for, you know, following this case of this young couple in Idaho who were sued $75,000 a day. And they took it all the way to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court threw it out 9-0. You know, and it's just a horrific kind of abuse of power, no matter where you sit. In the book, Breaking Point. Oh, I didn't. Yeah, I'm supposed to repeat this. I'm sorry. Yes.
How long does it take you to write this extended outline and then to flesh it out into a first draft?
With the series novels, with the Joe Pickett series, they usually take like 7 to 10 months from the beginning, from the research to the outline to the final draft. The standalones take longer because there's more background required because you have to make up. You don't start with a cast of characters. You've got to make it all up. So, and plus, I cannot write two complete books a year. As if you notice, it's like a book and a half every year. It's kind of my schedule. Some years two books come out, some just one. This year the short story thing came out, but most of those were previously written.
And do you write every day?
Mm-hmm. Except when I'm traveling around or fishing. Yes? Oh, cool.
I have had the Forest Service featured in several books, good and bad. You know, in the book Winter Kill, the third book, that's pretty much about a rogue Forest Service district supervisor who's assigned to Joe's district, who turns everything upside down. And so I'm sure it'll appear again, but I don't know if I'll do it. I won't, you know, do it similar in a similar way. That was something I thought was very interesting when I wrote that book, because I made it Forest Service supervisor. I really thought that I'd get some trouble from some Forest Service people because this woman is portrayed so horribly. But what happened is I got emails from Forest Service people from all over the country, and they said, "Oh my God, I know her. She's, you know, she's worse than you portray, you know." And it's a fictional character, but they all knew who this person was. Yes. Oh, good. Oh, they've been. She's talking about asking about being interviewed on Hugh Hewitt. They've been immensely valuable because I think he's heard in 120 different markets. He's a very smart man, and I think therefore he's got very smart listeners. And if he recommends books, his listeners buy those books and read those books. And he, unlike almost anybody else, he reads every single one. And when he first time he ever sat down to me to interview me, he brought out a 3-ring binder, and he'd start asking me questions from, at that point, all 12 of the books. And I couldn't remember some of that stuff. There's very few national talk show people who will actually interview authors who aren't just political or nonfiction authors. Hugh has his 5 or 6 favorite authors. Daniel Silva's one of them. Let's see, who's Brad Thor? I'm missing a couple. Vince Flynn, he did before Vince Flynn passed away, but that he'll do it an hour or two with them every time they have a new release, and it's really terrific. He's a good guy. He's a funny guy. He's the best interviewer I've ever heard. And he asks he rapid fires those questions that I when I leave that place, I always feel like I've been beaten up. Yeah. Yes. No, there's little bits here and there, you know, through the whole series, I think through all the books. But I don't think anybody buys a thriller or, you know, game warden book to, you know, have a bunch of laughs in it. I think most of the humor comes more from the character and their interaction. And if you know a character and present it in a certain situation, you know, if Nate Romanowski is confronted, you just sort of get ready to laugh. You know, what is he going to tear their ear off or what? You know, but thanks. Missy, yes.
Yes.
Thank you.
And I just have in my mind, I want to hear more from Sheridan.
You want to?
She's really gonna, I think she's sharp, and I think you should use her.
You'd like to hear more from Sheridan in the books. It's a possibility. You know, what I like to do, as you know, if you read them, is kind of key on a different family member with each book as sort of a subplot in addition to the main plot. And in the last book, all of a sudden I'm blanking out on the last, Stone Cold, Sheridan was the secondary plot. Yeah, she's in that. And in this, the one I'm writing right now, Endangered, the troubled daughter April is the focus. The next one that will come out, it's called Endangered. Yep, she's the one who left, took off with the cowboy. Yeah. Well, is it probably a good time to? If there's any, maybe I can answer one more question if there is one. And if not, go ahead, David.
I just want to say, Missy is my favorite character.
Oh.
I knew it would be you. Yeah. Thank you. And again, thank you all for coming, and I'd be happy to sign some books.
That's all for tonight's Author on Tour. I'm Darren Fote, and we have been podcasting live from the Tattered Cover Bookstore in Denver, Colorado. Stay pod-tuned in the coming weeks as we podcast Authors on Tour.